Hey, hey. What's up, everybody? That's pretty good. Now, I'm not going to be as kind as Daniel. Daniel's all, like, diplomatic about, oh, you know, it's so sad they missed out. They didn't set their clocks, whatever. Listen, 95% of us have smartphones, right? Right? And they update automatically. So you're just a dillweed if that's your excuse. You guys are here, so that's not you. But you can tell them what I said. Run and tell that. Anyway, so what we're going to do today is we're starting a new series called In the House. And now I'm a product of the 90s. I apologize beforehand. No, not really, because the 90s were awesome. Like, I miss the 80s, which is good. If you grew up in the 80s, I'm sorry. But, like, the big hair, poofy bangs, all that stuff wasn't happening for me, right? And then, like, 2000s, that's just weak. You guys got the Jonas Brothers. We got, like, all the cool alternative rock and all that stuff. Right? And then so, like, I just, for some reason or another, like, this phrase, in the house, which is the series we're doing today, it seems very 90s to me, and it probably is, and so that's how we're going with. Now, if you were a little bit kind of, like, late 90s, early 2000s, you'd probably say something like, in the heezy, fasheezy, muneezy, right? Because you're a Snoop Dogg kid, weirdo, right? So anyway, the point of all of this stuff is we're going to talk about the house, and the house in our context. If you've ever heard, maybe your grandpa said it like this, like the house of God, and they're talking about the church, right? So when you're going to church with your grandpa, you're going to the house of God, right? Anybody else ever have an experience quite like that? Hopefully not, but if you did, it's okay. So the house in our context, or for this series, or for us in general, in this particular reference or context, or whatever you want to call it, is the church. The house in the house is in the... No, you missed it. The church. Let's try that again. In the house is in the... Okay, you guys are good. That's good. And this kind of comes from... This language comes from reverse. It was in the video, but it kind of goes quick. And I know some of you guys went to New Diana, right? It's a little slower. So we can go halftime next time for you. But this is the verse. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15, it says this. I write so that you may know how you ought to conduct yourself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth. So you get, that's where it comes from. That's kind of the idea. The house of God is the church of the living God. And so what we're going to talk about in this series and kind of specifically today is there's a lot of people, like we don't have to look very far to figure out that a lot of people are kind of turning away from church, right? Especially, you know, I guess if you look at all the numbers and the statistics and the research and all the blah, 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 people right out of high school kind of heading into college and those, you know, very formative years, that's usually when people start checking out of church and kind of, you know, developing maybe a disdain or an apathy toward church. And we don't even have to look at the research. We know people, right? Like, you know, people that you work with or went to school with or whatever the case may be, that's kind of their, you know, situation, their predicament. I've got a little, just so we could clarify, and you guys know that I'm not making stuff up, I did pull one graph. I'm such a nerd. But I like graphs, and I like pictures and stuff, you know? And a graph to me is just a picture. I don't have to read it. I just look at it, and I'm like, oh, that makes sense, right? And so let's just follow with me here. If you see, these are the older people. So this is baby boomers. This is Generation X. I think I teeter somewhere between Generation X and Millennial. Daniel, where are we at? Yeah. We're somewhere right here, Daniel and I. The rest of you guys are probably right here. The vast majority. So anyway, if you see at the top, you see the yellow-ish where it says, that's, if you look at the graph, it's the non-religious. I need a pointer stick. Somebody give me something to whoop somebody with. Anyway, so that's the non-religious. And as the generations go, like this gap here at the bottom is the religious conservative, which basically, that's not a political term. People always get this stuff whacked out. Like, so the religious conservative are people who have very conservative religious beliefs, which, again, church would be a big part of that. It's a main part of your life, a very important, integral part of your life. And so you see, as the generations go, that group decreases, and the top one is the non-religious, which if you're non-religious, you don't go to church, right? And so that group increases. Everybody follow? You tracking? It just makes sense. I just wanted to bring up one graph so you guys didn't think I was a liar. That's that. You can get that off quick. Because I get distracted when I see picture. Ooh, picture. The underlying issue that this series addresses is the disdain that a lot of people have, or apathy that a lot of people in our culture have towards the local church. And like I said, you can find a lot more research than that. But we don't even have to do that. Like, we know people. Like, there's people that you go to school with. There's people that you go to work with. There's people in your family. There's people in your social circles who the importance of the church is being diminished every single day, or it's already at that point. And our job, here's our job. We can't change people's hearts. We can't change people's minds, but we can influence people. We can lead people to make decisions, right? I mean, that's our whole mission at Motion, is to lead people to live and move and have their being in Jesus Christ, right? That's the whole thing. We lead people. Have you guys ever heard the old expression? We're probably not. I don't know if anybody in here is a farmer or a rancher. I don't see many people that fit the description. Okay. I don't see any cowboy hats or boots. But if you're a rancher and you've heard the expression, you can't lead a horse to water. I mean, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, right? Like, that's kind of our thing. Like, dude, all we can do is lead people to a certain point. At the end of the day, they have to make decisions for themselves. And that's the best thing anyway, because you want to make your own decisions. Because when you make your own decisions, you believe what you believe because you believe it, not because somebody told you it's what you need to believe, right? And so that's what we do. We just lead people to a point where they can make a decision. In short, people are running away from the house. What we want to do is we want to lead people to run to the house, and that's what this whole thing is about today. We're going to talk about why it's important and what the heck that even means, and we're going to start with kind of the foundation. The first question is, what is the house? I feel like Sinbad would say that for some reason. I don't know. That ages me, doesn't it? Do you guys even know who Sinbad is? Okay, this is impressive. It's important. We've got to clarify terms because I want to make sure that we're all on the same page. Something that people do, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but something that people do is they take snippets or like little pieces or chunks or phrases and they kind of twist them for their own advantage or to say what they want it to say or to fit what it is that they want to do, right? People kind of misuse and abuse words and scriptures and all that stuff. And so one of the ways that we do that, some people like to justify their apathy towards the church with hints of religious language. Let me give you an example. I can be a Christian and not go to church. Like, that sounds kind of religious, right? Like, you want to do the right thing. You want to be a Christian. You can still love Jesus, but I don't have to go to church. And the problem with that is like, when you start doing that, like, you start to pick and choose which parts of Scripture you want to live out. Like, that's, you're kind of missing the point when you start doing that, right? Because I can find plenty of verses. If that's the case, then why the heck did Jesus go to church? I mean, read it. Jesus was in the temple all the time. That was their church back in the gap. What are you going to do with that? The Bible says that we're supposed to be Christian means to be Christ-like. And if Christ was in the church, in the house all the time, what do you think you should be doing? I don't know. You just fill in the gaps. You're smart people. You can do this. So going back to the verse that we originally referenced, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15, the word church is the Greek word. You've heard this, ekklesia. Ekklesia, or if you're cool, you say like ekklesia. I've got this. I'm so goofy, man. I'm sorry, but there's this little button you click on the website. I got this little translator thing, and it's this really old dude, and he pronounces it so much cooler than I can. I'm gonna start getting a recording, and I'm gonna hit it every time I want you guys to hear a cool word. It's gonna be like, and the word is ekklesia, and you guys are gonna be impressed because you think I did it, but I didn't do it. So, sorry. The word ekklesia, this is what the definition of ekklesia is. It means a gathering of citizens called out from their homes into some public place, an assembly. Okay, right? Are everybody tracking? You with me? And so if you look at it, and there's even kind of more to the definition. This isn't just some party where everybody comes and hangs out. Like, okay, let's get out of our house and go to Roadhouse and eat. And that's ekklesia, that's church, although that would be awesome. Maybe we need to bring the Roadhouse Rolls to church, and then everybody wins. Everybody wins at that point. But the definition is very much religious in nature. Kind of the language has the religious overtones. And as a matter of fact, one definition even states it like this. It says, it's an assembly of Christians gathered for worship in a religious meeting. And so when you see that the word, you know, church, ekklesia, means that we get out of our homes and we come together and we gather together for the purpose of worshiping our Creator. It's a religious meeting for that purpose. It's really easy for us, man. We make things so much more difficult than they have to be sometimes. Like, you want to know what church is? Hello. Right? I mean, isn't this it? This is ekklesia. This is it. This is us gathering together for the purpose of growing our faith, worshiping our Creator, and encouraging each other. Like, that's it. That's church. That's what it's all about. Dude, it can be in a different building. It could be in no building at all. It can be outside, but it's us being together worshiping God and encouraging each other and growing in our faith. That's what ecclesia is. And this is where I get frustrated. If you guys don't notice, I get frustrated a lot. I think I have a problem. And it gets worse with age. So I don't know what it's going to look like when I'm 50. I'm going to be mean or dead. Shelly's going to kill me. One of the two. But this is where some like really kind of pious religious people, they start yapping their gums. And they start talking about, I know you've heard this because I've heard it 1,000 times. You've heard it at least once, I'm sure. They start talking about how wrong the modern church is and how off the church is today. And the church today is just not what it was intended to be and all of that stuff. And they say things, you know, that it just doesn't look like it used to. What looks like it did 2,000 years ago? Right? Does this look different than it did 2,000 years ago? If by air condition and padded chairs and coffee, you mean different. Well, absolutely. I mean, what hasn't changed in 2,000 years? It's funny to me that everything else in the world can change but the church to these particular kinds of people. I mean, do you use cell phones? Because communication has changed. Do you drive a car? Because transportation has changed, right? Do you have air conditioning? I didn't come around to like, what, 1950? Mr. Carrier? Right? Anybody know? Anybody with me? Okay. That's when you give too much information, and everybody's like, "How do you know that?" I'm like, "Because I can remember all of the dumb things, but I can't remember the really important things." That's my life, and it's funny to me how these people are quick to point out how wrong the church is, but nothing really. I mean, if you look at it, everything else in the world can change, but they're only mad if things in the church change, and it doesn't really change like the physical outside changes. We say things like this in church, like maybe the presentation has changed, but the message is still the same. Right? Have you ever heard that? And that's just it. Like, sure, maybe buildings don't look like they used to. They're a lot freaking cheaper because when they build ornate cathedrals overlaid with gold, they're spending a lot more money than we are on our lease right here. Right? Now, if you want to put gold on the ceiling and you got that kind of stacking paper, I don't know, you go ahead and do it. I mean, I think we could use it better somewhere else, but that's just me. Are you with me? Does anybody got that kind of money? Just out of curiosity, we can talk later. Let me know after the experience, and then we're going to lunch on you. And so what's important, like absolutely things about it change, but what's important is that we remain true to the spirit of what the original church was. Like, you know, when the church was first established, the Acts church or the first century church or whatever you want to call it, like, it really wasn't so much about where, but it was about who and the fact that they were getting together and they were coming out. They were called out into a public gathering, and they were worshiping, and they were all about Jesus, and they were all about people, and they were all about life change and transformation through grace. Like, that's what they were all about. And if you fast forward 2,000 years ago, like, that's what the church is still about. It's still about Jesus, and it's still about people. And it's still about life change and transformation through grace. Like, that's what it's all about. And as long as we remain true to that, we're still true to the spirit of the Acts church, the first church, the church that, you know, everybody else wants to compare us to, right? Like, it's not, a lot of things are going to change, but as long as that remains the same, then we're good. We win. So that's what the house is. And so now we're going to talk about, let me kind of set this up. We're not talking about this for the sake of cracking on people who leave the church, because we're just not about that. Like, that's not how we do things. But a lot of people, the facts are that a lot of people are running from the house. And I think it's important to talk about this because hopefully you're having conversations with people who maybe are in that boat or that situation. And you need some information. Like, you need to know how to come to them, not come at them. There's a difference, right? Like, don't come at people because they're not part of your church and all. Because this is so crazy to me, because then you start getting into this word that's really an oxymoron, spiritual pride. Like, how does that work? How can you have pride about how spiritual you are? Because that just doesn't seem to hold water. But that's just me. And so, again, the point of this message isn't to bash on people that have ditched the church or aren't going to church, but to point out the reasons why. That way we have information for the conversations that hopefully we're having. And I think it's important to have this stuff for ourselves because, you know, you're probably going to be tempted at some point to say, man, you know, church just ain't really doing it for me. Like, if we're honest. Or you're going to get hurt because somebody says something about your mama in church. I mean, hopefully they wouldn't say it about your mama in church. But if they did, like, people get offended. This whole I'm offended thing, it just blows me away. It blows me away. You watch garbage on television, and it's all about, like, so-and-so tripping on so-and-so, and so-and-so, I'm going to beat your mama up on Jerry Springer. And you watch this stuff, And then you come to church and one person says something or looks at you the wrong way. Oh my, I'm so offended. God, did you see them? Kill them. Right? It just blows me away. And so we live in a culture, it's so many double standards. And then, of course, this is one of my favorite, like one of the lies about the church that people buy into. It's full of hypocrites. You dadgum right. I mean, what did you expect? Like, we're human, right? Like, nobody ever said, now, if the front that we put on or the facade that we presented was that when you get in here, you're perfect, well, then maybe there would be hypocrites. But you're not a hypocrite if you aren't doing what you say that you, I don't know, you know what I'm saying. Like, nobody ever said that we can't, let me back up and try this again. There's just so many things like that I want to tell you guys, but I don't want to screw this thing up because it's really important that we get it right. Like, nobody ever said, nobody in here is claiming that we got it all together. Like, nobody in here is claiming that, hey, look at me, I am the example, the epitome of perfection. Like, we just don't do that. That's not how we roll. Like, every one of us, in an honest moment, you know you, and you know you got flaws, and you know you got issues, and that's fine because we're working towards those things. Like we've said before, it's never about perfection, but it's about pursuit. And God knows that you're not perfect, but as long as you're pursuing him, that pleases the heart of God. And that's what it's all about. And that's the way that we present this thing. So when people are like, dog, y'all are a bunch of hypocrites, you're like, I ain't a hypocrite. I never said I was good, right? I never said I was perfect. I never said I was awesome or this or that or the other. I'm just pursuing God the best that I can, the best that I know how, and living the best that I can, right? Trying to honor, you guys get the point. So that one gets me so frustrated. I'm going to be frustrated a lot today. This is kind of interesting. Have you ever heard somebody say the word frustrated? Oh, yeah. The way we say words in East Texas, man, it's so fun. And so anyway, if I were the devil, and I'm not, for clarification, had to make sure my wife picked up on that. If I were the devil, and I'm not, this is what I would do. I would try to confuse people as to what the church is, what the purpose of the church is, and my goal would be to separate people and to get people away from the church, to get people to leave the church. Like, if I were the devil, that's the way that I would come at the masses, and that's the way I would come at society. And I think he did. And I think he did a pretty freaking good job. Like, he did a really, really, I mean, you saw the statistics, you saw the numbers, you know people. Like, we don't even have to look at numbers and statistics when we know names. Like, and so what he does is he separates people, he isolates people. And when you're isolated, you're so much easier to pick off. It says, it's so interesting. This is, follow me here. I'm going to try to connect some dots. It says in John chapter 10, verse 10, you've heard this one, that the thief, the enemy, the devil, only comes to steal, to kill, and to destroy. Like, it's funny that there's two parts to that verse, and we always quote the other one. Like, Jesus saying, I came to give you life and abundantly, like life more abundantly. We always quote that, but we never quote the other side of it where it says, the devil comes to kill, to steal, and destroy. It's funny to me. You guys didn't find it as funny as I did, but that's beside the point. And so I believe that what he wants to do, what the devil wants to do, and look, let me kind of set this up. I'm not like, you know, the devil did it. You know, I'm not one of those kind of people where every stupid decision that you make, I don't blame it on the devil, I blame it on you, right? And so, but I believe that he is there, and I believe that he is at work, and he's trying to influence people to make stupid decisions so that he can still kill and destroy their lives. And so this is what happens. I believe, just like in the wild, how many of you guys have ever watched like an African safari show? Right? Anybody? Man, I watch the weirdest stuff on TV, I guess. Tell me you've seen a lion in the wild, right? And what they do, this is what they do. When they want to get their prey, you know what they do? They separate their prey from the herd, from the pack, from the, you know, say it's some hyenas. I know they don't eat hyenas. Those things are hideous. Wildebeest. Yeah. That's a good one. Those things are freaky looking, right? And so what they do is they separate whatever their prey is. Maybe it's not wildebeest. That was a terrible gazelle. Yeah, they track down the gazelle. There we go. And so they separate them from the pack, from the herd. And man, I'm convinced that if you look at some of the language, read this. It says in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, it says, be alert and of sober mind, your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. I don't know. Maybe it's just coincidence that that's the way that a lion operates, and that's the way that the devil is, you know, compared to, or the analogy is made. It's just interesting to me that the same way that a lion devours people and devours his prey is the same way that the devil is kind of referenced and referred to in this verse. And man, what's crazy is, dude, you see this happen all the time. Maybe you don't have as many conversations as Shelly and I do, but we see this crap happen all the time. People come to us and they're like, man, my relationships are falling apart. My marriage is falling apart. My money is falling apart. Like, I'm having financial problems. My kids are buck wild. My life is in shambles. And this is what they usually say. They just like, have you ever had a conversation with somebody where they start to tattle on themselves a little bit? And they're like, and I know I haven't been coming to church like I should, but every time, it's like, you know, they got to get that out. And I'm like, start right there. Like, I'm not telling you. Do not misquote me. I'm not saying that if you come to church every time we open the doors that you're going to have a perfect life. That is not what I'm saying. But it's a heck of a place to start. It's a heck of a place to start to get your life back on track or to stay on track. And man, it's just crazy to me that we can't seem as a culture to put that together. That people who go to church, like, this is secular research shows that people who go to church have happier, healthier lives than people who don't. You figure it out, right? It's almost as if God knows what he's doing. It's just crazy. And so when we have these conversations with people whose lives are in shambles, and I haven't been going to church like I should, but run to the house. Like, that's what you need to do. You need to stop running from the house. You need to run to the house. Because if you run from the house, who knows what's going to happen to your family? If you keep running from the house, who knows what's going to happen to your marriage? And again, this is not foolproof. I'm not making promises. I'm not over-promising so that we under-deliver. That's not what the goal is here. But man, it's the right place to start. It's at least the first place that you should start. So man, we got to convince people to run to the house, which is our last point. Run to the house. It gets more and more ghetto every time we say it. It was like, run to the, now it's run to duh. Like, I got different levels of hood in my mind that I work with, so you guys have to bear with me. I'm just convinced, and I don't know why this is so important to me, and like, maybe it's because, you know, I have a church and I'm the pastor of the church, I'm supposed to care about it, but what's funny is I've cared about it long before I was even a pastor. Like, church has just always been, I guess, since I've been a follower of Jesus. And I got saved as a senior in high school. And the church has always just meant so much to me. It's always been something that was very valuable and I held in high esteem. And I think that something as followers of Jesus that we should value is the church. Man, you know, I can't even begin to tell you how frustrated it makes me, right? Isn't that three frustrations that I have? When people just start nagging on the church. And this is what is so funny, and it's the same kind of people. People who can always find problems but never find solutions. People who always have something bad to say but never have anything good to say or any way to fix the problem. They're kind of the negative, the trollish type people. And what, you know, they just start cracking on the church, and you know, the church is this and the church is that and the church ain't done nothing for me and the church is blah, 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 blah. I'm like, what have you done? Like, what is it that you have contributed? You're such a taker, and you've never even taken time to think about what it is that you could give, because we all have something that we could give, but we're so consumeristic that we don't even think about what it is that we could contribute. I don't know, maybe something to think about, right? That's just me. So in spite of what trends say and in spite of what even your emotions say sometimes, you just can't go wrong being part of the church. You just can't go wrong running to the house. Hebrews chapter 10, you've probably heard this one, when somebody's trying to guilt you into going to church. Hey, has that ever happened, right? Your mama's like, nah, it says don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. You're going to get your butt up out of bed and go to church. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Okay. Maybe your mama was more kind than that. She didn't have a big stick. Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 and 25, it says this. And man, this is so good. This is so good. And we're going to spend some time here, so just, I hope you enjoy it. It says, let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. That's a pretty good place to start. Let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. And this is the one where you get guilted. Not forsaking our own assembling together. The word assembling, does it look familiar? It's the word ekklesia. Not forsaking our own calling out to a public place, an assembly, a place for Christian worship. Not forsaking that, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another. Like, isn't that so good? Like, here's the deal. Get together, stimulate each other to love and good deeds. Don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together like some people do. That's their business. That's their prerogative. They're wrong. And, you know, that's fine for them. But you don't do that. You don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together, and you encourage each other. I don't know. It seems pretty logical to me. It's interesting to note here that just like everything else that God does, there's always value and benefit in it for us. Like, it's just amazing to me that that's the way that it works out. And I found this little article, and I thought this was so cool. And this is what it says. I just took a little excerpt. I didn't pull it just so it would say what I wanted it to say. You can look it up. It says, one of the best things that you can do to improve your physical and mental health is attend religious service regularly. Isn't that crazy? It says, one of the best things that you can do to improve your physical and mental health is attend religious services regularly. If you don't, like, this is not, you know, I'm not trying to scare you into going to church. If you don't, statistically, you're going to die. Well, it doesn't say it quite like that. It says, statistically, you'll live an average of 7 fewer years than frequent churchgoers, according to an academic study. Isn't that crazy? And there's a lot of factors, I'm sure, you know, because if you're strung out on crack, you probably don't go to church, so that kind of shortens your lifespan. You guys get that? I mean, yeah, obviously, right? But, so I'm sure there are a lot of factors, but overall, when you take all of the factors and you put it all together, people that go to church who regularly attend religious services, who are all about stimulating each other to love and good deeds, which is healthy for you, and who encourage each other, which is healthy for you, live an average of 7 years longer than people that don't do that. And so, again, like I said, there's probably a lot of factors, but it really hinges on this one word that we throw out all of the time. It's the word community, like being together, getting together, doing life together, praying for each other, doing whatever that means for you and whatever that looks like for you. The point is, you just have to do it. Stimulate one another to love and good deeds. Encourage one another. Those all lead to a better life. Like, that's the upside of it. But there's kind of the downside too. So, you know, like, this is what happens when we do, but this is what happens when we don't. If you take that word forsake, as it says, you know, it says don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. The word forsake means to abandon or desert. Not desert, but like desert, right? Anybody want ice cream, right? That's not what it means. But what's frightening about this is that if we forsake the assembling of ourselves together, if we abandon this notion of this being important and this having value, you know that there's a direct correlation between the moral decline in America and church attendance in America? I just, you know, again, so coincidental, right, that things work out the way that they do. And so let me just ask you a question like this. Think about things 50 years ago, like let's go 55, 60 years ago, 1950s, early 1960s, and then you fast forward to today. There are things today that would be completely repulsive back then that are absolutely normal today. Like the things that people wear, for example. Like, I know we talk about modesty all the time, but if your butt cheeks are hanging out, something's wrong. Especially if you're a dude. I see guys at the gym wearing tights. I'm like, dog, what are you doing? Stop. There's no sense in that. But for real, like, the things that are socially and culturally acceptable to wear today, you would have been a hooker in the 1950s. Like, I'm not being rude. I'm just telling you the truth. Like, if you got in a time machine and went back and you dressed like that, they're like, oh, there's your corner right over there. Yes. Like, seriously. It's not that funny. But that's true. Like, language. Let's talk about that. Look, and I'm not saying that all of this stuff hasn't been around for years. And I mean, if you go back to the 1800s, people went out into the street and shot each other. So I'm not saying morality was at an all-time high then. But I'm saying the rate at which it happens and the acceptability of it today is greater than it's ever been. And there's a trend that it follows moral decline, you know, kind of the church attendance and moral decline going together. And so it's just interesting. So if this is how it looks 50 years, you know, from then to now, what's it going to look like in another 50 years? If we continue to forsake the assembling of ourselves together, if we continue to abandon the notion of the church being important, and I'm preaching to the choir because you guys are here, like, you guys get that. But see, it never stops with just us. Like, so much in our life, it's so easy to get caught up because we live in this culture where take care of number one, like, you got you, I'm gonna get mine's, right? Like, that's kind of the culture that we live in. But your life is not your own. Like, it's never been just about you. Like, every decision that you make affects at least two or three people, at least. And so the way that we do this is we influence other people to see the importance of it, first and foremost, by the way that you live your life. Like, don't be telling me to do something that you ain't doing yourself, right? Man, the one... It's just kind of think about this for a second. I'm a visual person, so I just kind of saw like a parody in a commercial and somebody getting slapped or something really weird. And so you guys didn't think that was as interesting as I did. You're like, what's wrong with this guy? But I can just imagine it's like, oh man, my church is awesome. You should come, and they show up and you ain't here. Right? And then next time they see you, you getting stuck. Right? That was the picture I had in my head. I'm sorry for that. But that's just the point. Don't try to sell me something that you ain't smoking. I mean, and I hope you ain't smoking anything. You know what I'm saying? I got to work on my expressions, man. It's the hood thing. I'm in the house. I'm in the house. We smoking whatever in the house. And so, look, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that if we continue on the rate or the path that we're going at the rate that we're going, like, we don't have an extremely bright future. And I'm not a prophet by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not a doom and gloom guy. But you can put two and two together, that if we continue to have kind of this decline in church attendance, we're going to have a decline in moral, you know, obligation and moral whatever. Moral, what is the word? There's a good one for it. Anybody? It's good. Moral good. That's the point. And so really, it comes down to this. Like, what are you going to do about it? Like, so many people, you want to put the responsibility on the church to promote the church. But this is where it gets tricky and funny, because everybody wants to use this when it's advantageous for them. Well, I'm the church. There you go. Right? Everybody's like, well, I'm the church. The church isn't a building. I'm the church. You're exactly right. And this is the building that we gather in for church. So you've got a responsibility to build the church. Like, it's not about me, like, saying, hey, come to my church. It's about us saying, hey, my church is awesome. Like, every church in Longview says they're awesome, right? Which is good. There's a lot of churches for a lot of different people. I just like this one a lot better than the rest of them. That's my own personal opinion. I am biased. And so I want to wrap this up with just a little bit of reiteration. The church is, in my opinion, the most important entity on the face of the earth. And so for us, like, man, don't run from it, run to it. And don't let other people run from it. Lead them to run to it. Like, that's the best thing that you can do for them. It's the best place that you can get them to start. Because, you know, I guess so many people, they have whatever bend against the church they have. But what we can do is lead them to the church. And in the church, we don't make people fall in love with Jesus, but we set up dates. And so you're just kind of like a dating service, right? Like, you bring them here, they meet Jesus, they're like, hey, and, you know, they fall in love and life is good, right? I don't think it really goes down quite like that, but we could start our own eHarmony for Jesus website. It'd be good. I think that the local church is so important to me, because I can see an overview of my life. And if it weren't for the church, I am 100% convinced that I would probably be dead or something, like really bad, kind of in that path or that direction. Like, I just don't know that I would be here. I know that I wouldn't be here today. I don't even know if I would be alive today if it weren't for the local church. You know, I got saved as a senior in high school, and man, I wish it would have been sooner, because, you know, you have so many regrets when you live the way that you live and the stupid things that you do. I would wake up in mornings, like some mornings, and not have any idea how I got where I was at. I could just have no clue how I ended up where I ended up. And what's frightening is that I was the one with the keys. And then I started going to church, and it was like, got to knock that crap off, right? And God just softened my heart and softened the edges and showed me the things that I needed to change and the things that weren't pleasing to him and the things that were pleasing to him. And you start right walking down the right path, and you can look back kind of with the privilege of hindsight and see, if it weren't for the church, I very well may be dead. And that may be the reason it's so important to me. Maybe your story's a little bit different. Maybe you were a good person, but you still need Jesus, right? Doesn't matter how good you are, your good isn't good enough. But that's not really the point. The point is, we all have a different story that matters, and the church is kind of an integral part of that story. But your story can help somebody else's story begin. We just have to lead them to the house. You with me? All right, let me pray for us. Father, we love you so much. God, we are so thankful for everything that you do for us. God, we are so thankful for your love for us. God, that's modeled through this church. God, that you've given us a place and a group of people to do life with. God, somewhere that we can come. God, and we can cast our cares and our worries and our burdens on you because we know that you care for us. God, I pray that this is always that kind of place, a place where, God, it doesn't matter what we've been, and it doesn't matter what we've done, and it doesn't matter what we're going through at the moment, God, but we can come and lay all of that stuff down and just feel the refreshing spirit of your love and your peace and your grace. God, I pray that you would help us, God, to see the importance of this, not just for ourselves, God, but for other people. God, just because our lives are good doesn't mean that we should let up or take it easy or be apathetic, God, but it's always about paying it forward. It's always about leading other people to the grace that we've experienced. God, I pray that you help us to understand that, to live that, and to build your church, to build the house. God, we ask for all of these things in Jesus' name. And everybody said, amen.